Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team. My hope is to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Educators are often misrepresented in pop culture, but the TV show Abbott Elementary has emerged as a refreshing exception, combining comedy with authenticity. The series captures both the challenges and the triumphs of life as a teacher. Its portrayal is so striking and real that sometimes I find it very overwhelming to watch, but it truly highlights the dedication and hard work of educators everywhere. And today we're thrilled to have Joyce Steffens Abbott on our show, one of the real life inspirations behind Abbott Elementary. And Joyce is a veteran educator from Philadelphia whose career has been nothing short of inspiring. Welcome to the show, Joyce.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you. Thank you.
I've just been so excited to chat with you and get to know you a little bit more because I can tell that you're an educator at heart. I've read your book and I just know the work that you've done and the people that you've inspired students through over the years. And so I'm excited to hear, kind of glean from your wisdom for our audience. So first, I would love for you to just kind of share a little bit more about your connection to the show Abbott Elementary. It seems like maybe it was named after you, maybe. And then kind of what the experience like has been since this show has aired.
Well, okay, that's great. Actually, the name of the show was inspired by me. I was Quinta's sixth grade teacher at Andrew Hamilton School in West Philadelphia. So the name of the show, Abbott Elementary, was actually inspired by me, her sixth grade teacher, Joyce Abbott. And since the show, it's really been really interesting and really kind of fun. Different for my life. I've had the opportunity to speak to many educators, many people in education. I've had the opportunity just to meet wonderful people from every area of the United States. Just so many powerful people out here doing this work in education that may not, you know, be known in the spotlight, but that has been just so meaningful to me. The people I've met and being able to speak and maybe inspire and instill hope in some people who have lost, you know, so much faith in the profession, which we see is so difficult today to hire and retain teachers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right that like one of the things that watching the show sort of makes me think about is just how it highlights just the kind of the work that people do that doesn't get recognized and the trials and the triumphs of what it looks like to be an educator and how rewarding it can be when you're making a difference in the lives of students. I've just been so inspired in a lot of ways because I think even reading your book, it was really evident that the kind of work that you were doing with students just really is, it's the deep work that you do that really matters for the lives of students. And so I want to talk about your book because I do think that this, you know, reading is called Teaching the Miss Abbott Way. And I think I learned a lot just about your, over the years of the different things that you encountered. And so would you, was there anything surprising that kind of you encountered when you wrote the book? Was there anything that you're like, oh, I forgot about that instance, like as you were reflecting and writing lessons that you've learned?
Well, it was so many moments, honestly, throughout my teaching career, but even reading back and through the entire process, I really don't think I ever would have did a deep self-reflection on my career as I did, you know, through the process of writing this book. And then actually it helped me to really clearly realize and see, I was like, you did all of that. So that was like really eye-opening to me, just during that self-reflection, the things that I did, like, I was like, wow, you did all of that. I think I covered mostly every element. I'm sure I didn't cover everything that I did, but the ones that, you know, really stood out and the ones that I felt was imperative and including in the book were included. As far as, you know, with the self-reflection, I really didn't even realize that I did all of that. And I don't think I would have did a deep self-reflection of my teaching career upon retirement if it was not for writing the book, if I didn't write the book.
Well, you know, I've talked with other educators sometimes, and we oftentimes were like, we could write a book about what we experienced in this year, or even just the things that we've learned. And because, you know, part of being a really great teacher, being a great educator, is that reflection on your work. Mm-hmm. Because every year you're trying to improve on what you're doing and to impact the students again the next year. I never taught the same year twice because I always feel like I learned something. Yeah. Every year and got a little bit better. And I think that deep reflection is so essential. And I think that's why books like this and reflections from veteran educators are so important, because you know, there are lots of aspects of education that change and lots of aspects of teaching that change. I'm sure you saw that over the years.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
But there are some of those things that are still the same. Like, you still have students that are there to learn. And you're still problem solving and trying to find the best thing that works for students. So I want, one of the statements that stuck out to me is you said that teaching is more than instruction. And that may seem obvious to many of us, but what does that mean for you?
Okay, teaching is more than instruction. It means that while we are, you know, hired and our job is to educate, you know, our students in our midst through our instruction, it is really equally as important to take into account outside factors, such as, did they eat last night? Look at the shoes that they wear. Do they have sneakers? The community in which they come from, because so often we don't understand why a student may sleep all through class, or a student is so angry all the time, or a student has behavior problems. You cannot effectively instruct without getting to the root of those problems, because it's a block there for those students. So that is where, you know, building those relationships come in. So it's not just about going into the class and say, okay, this is a curriculum that's placed before me. You know, I'm just going to teach. But if there are other barriers and other obstacles in these young people's life, it's going to be a barrier to their success and even obtaining your instruction. So it is definitely more than instruction. And that's why I think so many people leave the profession. I'm not equipped for this, but it is building those relationships and getting and understanding the total student and everything that they can in order to be effective with the instruction.
Yeah. Well, because education isn't just a job. It's the work of, I would say it's human work, right?
It's human work. And it's definitely a calling too. You know, you really have to be called to this profession and really want to do it within your heart, not just for the paycheck or not just for summers off and holidays off, because if that is your main priority for being in this work, it is just, it's not going to help you in being effective. So it's really a calling. Like, I am really called to this. I really want to make a difference, you know, because if you change, you could change the world one student at a time. And if you did your part, you're so impactful on a large scale. So it's definitely a calling.
Yeah. Well, even in that, realizing that, you know, it may, in the midst of it, it may not seem like you're changing the world. Cause I always think that of this as a middle school teacher, that I never really got to see the end result. We'd send them off after eighth grade and go and hope, you know, hope for the best in high school. And so there's sometimes where it's like, I was a drop in the bucket of their education career. Right, but sometimes, you know, that moment with that student could be change the trajectory of their life in a lot of ways.
Exactly. Yes.
And so, I mean, I'm sure that you have former students that have come to you and going, I remember this moment in your classroom, even just the fact that you had that kind of that moment of Quinta Brunson's life, that you were one of the teachers that clearly impacted her life, as we can tell from her work on the show. And so I just feel like that's a phenomenal word just to say that it's more than a job. It is a calling.
Definitely.
Yeah. So here at our company, we are, you know, we're all about MTSS, multi-tiered systems of support. And a lot of the work these days is focused on behavior interventions. And you have a whole chapter about classroom management in your book. What would you say is a misconception about dealing with students that have difficult behaviors?
That's also a really good question, because we are faced with so many students with behavior issues in our classrooms today. But some big misconceptions are that they want to behave this way. They never can change. They're horrible, and it's no hope for them. It's misconceptions because I've seen so many students come all the way from the lower grades, suspension every year, behaviors. They said, oh, they've been a problem since kindergarten. And a misconception is that they cannot and will not change. That's not true, because I had several come to me that were in trouble every year that they were in school until they came to me. Another misconception is the family life or the home life, the parent or guardian, the caretaker, who is ever responsible for the student, just don't care. But so often we have grandparents and great-grandparents that are thrust into these situations that they do care. They just send a difficult time. And we also have parents, a lot of single parents who do care. I've met many that really cared and went above and beyond and was working, and their child was just acting up in school. So those are definitely misconceptions, because I had to get to the root of the problem, because I received so many behavior problems or labeled behavior problems that came to my class. And I said, this foolishness is going to stop. We're not doing that this year, because we have to learn, and just hearing their story. And most of the instances, they came with some severe issues from home, just things they have encountered in their life, and also from teachers that they had. They said, you're never going to be none. You're horrible. And always wanted to suspend them and always wanted to punish them. I had students that came to me that were never allowed to go on a trip because they were in a behavior problem. So they was like, this is the first time I could go on a trip. Well, no one's going to go. We all can't go. So, and I've had parents and grandparents said, this is the first ever for my child, because they're just not allowed to do anything because of their behavior. Hmm. So we have to understand and build that relationship and get to the root of that. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't always happen, because you really have to understand the community in the background. And I say that all the time before you walk into these schools. If you're walking into the school and you have no clue of what to expect, you can't even fathom someone going to sleep hungry, because this is nothing you ever experienced. You can't even imagine a child going to sleep with gunfire shots all through the night. You can't, you know, imagine children sleeping in rodent infested and bug infested homes and still trying to sleep and eat and get up and bathe. So that is something we have to understand in order to effectively, you know, just be able to reach that child on every level.
Yeah. So I like what you said about the parent involvement, that kind of misconception that a parent just doesn't care. Best advice, advice that I had gotten when I was a new teacher was a principal had said, you know, we were going up for parent-teacher conferences, and they just said, just remember you're on the same team, and they want what's best for their student, just mm-hmm. like you do. Mm-hmm. And I think that walking in with that assumption rather than other maybe impressions or ideas about the parent based on the student behavior, just assuming that the parents want what's best, the family wants what's best for the student just as much as you do. And I think that helped me have that perspective about students, and that we were all on the same team. You know, we all wanted
exactly. That's so important, that team.
Yes. We talk a lot about teamwork, kind of speaking of teams. And in your book, you share that was a lesson that you learned. Can you talk a little bit about how teamwork impacted your career in education?
That's good, because teamwork is so important, because as students travel from teacher to teacher, when I first started, I had self-contained. So I taught all of the major subjects with the exception of the specialties like the gym, the art, and the music. But even you coming from middle school, you know, they travel from reading, math, you know, the sciences. So teamwork as a team, in order, if it's a child within that team's end that is deemed a behavior problem, it takes a team to collaborate together to ensure that this child's success. Because if it's a weak link on that team, it's going to hinder that child's success. So teamwork, even building, like, this is what we need to do to improve them with their writing prompt. This is what we need to do to improve them on their constructive response, because you can build from each other, you can learn from each other, you can share ideas, and you can support each other. And the team is so important, because if you ever have that time where we all do, where we feel like we're going to break, where you have that colleague where you can go to and lean on, and they can pick you up and encourage you and keep you going. So a team is so important. I did a talk at a major school district within the United States last year, and they were acknowledging teachers who did so well. And one of the teachers that was acknowledged, I felt bad when they called her, like, a lot of her team, no one like really stood up and was clapping. And I spoke with her later at a private luncheon, and she said she was basically new, but she came in and she worked so hard to improve her students that she got acknowledged. But evidently, she didn't have a team to support her. And that really hurt me, because she was new and she worked very hard, but she didn't have that team. And so it diminished her, you know, her confidence a little, just that she couldn't be happy with this moment where she was being acknowledged because her team wasn't happy for her. So a team is so important, in building each other and celebrating each other. It can make the difference. It can make the difference in a person's career. So team is very important. And I know that teamwork from the military. You know, I'm coming up 10 years. I was coming up 10 years in the military, and teamwork was so important. You had to depend on your battle buddy for everything. So it is important. So I'm definitely a team player.
Yeah. Well, and I think research shows that that work of the teacher collective efficacy is so impactful into the students. And I think that it also makes your victory or your success even better when you get to share it with a group of people. And I think about different students that I've had over the years, and you know, now I see them on Facebook or see their success, and it's so cool to see all of the people I worked with be able to comment on, you know, their successes, and just knowing that we all kind of share that success, or we share that time with that student, and it's kind of a shared experience with us to see that student succeed and do really well. And so I think that even when you need a team to depend on when things are really hard, but you also be able to share that success is more meaningful when you have a team. And just the importance of collaboration, right? We can't solve all the problems ourselves. I think that it's the hardest thing is when you feel like that if a school is kind of in silos and everyone sort of sticks to their own classroom, sometimes like that's hard, because you're like, I need other people to bounce ideas off of, or maybe that student's succeeding in another classroom and it's not in mine. And so I think that that can be a really important piece of teamwork. So I love that you kind of talk about how like sharing that story, because how important that is for teachers, especially if they're new.
Exactly.
That's so important.
Because they need that support. They're new. You don't walk into this work great.
Yeah. Well, great. Yeah. And you talk in your book about being a new teacher and how truly nothing can prepare you, especially, you know, for your first day in the classroom. And I can relate to that. And especially if you don't know how to talk to students. So what advice would you give to educators about talking to students?
Good. A practice that I did, try not to talk at them, you know, try to converse, have a conversation with them. Let them know that their voice matters. Let them know that their opinion matters. Also, be willing to take responsibility for your actions. Like I would always say, things that I say, you may not want to hear, but you need to hear. But understand, if Ms. Abbott ever says something that hurt your feelings, that you didn't like, please come in and talk to me about that, because I'm not that big where I can't apologize. And then having those conversations, you're like, you're not always right. And even though we are the teacher, we are the educator, we can be wrong. And we have to accept responsibility for our actions, as we expect them to accept responsibility for their actions. So communication, dialogue with each other, not talking at them or to them. This is what you're going to do. What do you think you could have done better? You know what I mean? What did you think you, and I'm sick of you doing this. So what can we do to, as opposed to saying it, so what can we do to change this behavior? Engage in conversation and not talk at them or talk to them, and let their voice be heard and let them know that their voice matters. And what they say, you know, you really care about what they say also, because they said, nobody ever listens. They don't ever believe what I say. They're not going to listen to me anyway. I've heard that a lot, but my students know I'm always going to listen to you, because it was times, that's why I never suspended a student. Even when their staff may want them to tell a story like, oh, we were helping them. I know one time they said, oh, two of my students came back from lunch late. Oh, we were helping them. One of the assistants in the lunchroom said, they were helping me clean. And I just looked at her and I looked at them and I said, is that true? And they was like, no, I'm sad, but we were playing because they were honest. I'm built into, you know, they were honest. And so they knew that they could talk to me even when it was something that they did wrong, even when it's something they did wrong, because they knew I cared. And I would sit there and talk to them. So why do you think I'm disappointed in you for this behavior? Why? And they would, you know, could self-reflect. But it's so important to have a conversation and just not talk at them or to them, you know. And then we have to be careful of our tone also when speaking to them. And that the way that they're important. And their voice matters also.
Yeah. Well, I got this a lot as a middle school teacher. And many of my students often felt misunderstood. And that was the time of life when I think you feel misunderstood in a lot of ways. Just adolescence is that time. And but it was really important to me to make sure that they had a place where they could feel understood, or that someone would listen and validate how they felt, even if it was a struggle for me. Sometimes I was like, I don't know why you feel that way, but it's important to validate how they feel and that their voice mattered and that we heard them. And because they are human beings, right? Like they're people who are, they're students who are figuring themselves out and figuring out what their voice is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to not shut that down too much. And I think you're right in the sense of not talking at them, because that way they understand that that not only does their voice matter, but they as a person matters.
Exactly.
And they're not dismissed. Because sometimes young people can feel that way. And I love how you talked about just apologizing for when we're wrong. I think that is, you know, I think that is an important lesson to learn, because sometimes we do get it wrong, and to model what it looks like to admit, hey, I got that wrong. I didn't say that right. I apologize for my tone. And it helping them understand what it looks like. Because I think sometimes they just may not see apologies happen from adults.
Exactly. Right. They don't.
So you talked earlier about community, and it's such an important factor for our students, whether we see it or not. So what should it look like for teachers to be partners with the community?
That's good also. First of all, in order to partner with the community, you have to, you know, have some understanding of the community. That's why so often so many teachers leave after a first year in a particular school, because, oh, I can't do this neighborhood. I can't. They're scared to even go to their car. So understanding the community, understand the stores, understand, like, I had a relationship with they call them little poppy stores here, you know, little stores that sell on the junk. I had a relationship with them. Understand, you know, or have understanding of the parks they go to. Build relationships with the community partnerships, like the churches, and have some members in their community, because there's several positive people within our communities that our children really have no clue that are right in the midst of their community. You know, not just the drug dealers or the ones hanging out doing the wrong thing, and invite them to speak. I did that so much. I would have had students come back to speak, or people within the community come back to speak, and then attend a game, maybe a game or a dance recital. That means so much to students too, to have their teacher present, but it helps you become more effective, just understanding the community and building that bridge with the community and bringing the community within your classroom, even teaching them about different places or monuments, statues within their community. Because so many of the students in my class had never been even to the museum at the Franklin Institute, the zoo. They've never been, and it's right in their city. But just building them partners, because there's so many partnerships out there. But really understanding that community and the neighborhoods that the students that you are serving come from. You know, just understand it. And I know, like, the school that I left, I mean, they had a high level of gun violence. So I can understand, you know, the teachers having, you know, being scared, because doing virtual learning, a lot of them, you know, you're supposed to maybe sometimes go out, maybe, you know, just visit or see your students, take a little treat. That wasn't happening. But I didn't have a fear. I didn't have a fear of taking things to students' house or going and checking on students. I didn't have a fear. Number one, I was a product of the community in which I taught in. I'm a product of the Philadelphia public school system, a product of West Philadelphia. And I came back to teach and where to school and where I was raised. So it was no fear for me. I understood the little neighborhood, what they call poppy stores, the little neighborhood delis where they sell, you know, all this crazy air. And I understood the parks, the X centers. I understood what a block party was when they had the block parties and block off the street and everyone's dancing. So I understood that so I could relate even in conversations, you know, with the students. But it's just so important to build that community and have an understanding of the community and build bridges with the community.
Yeah. I like what you said about, you know, attending a sports event or a dance mm-hmm. recital. Like those are so meaningful for students. I mean, I know that I would in middle school, you know, try to attend some of the, whether it be a football game or a soccer game or something to be able to, number one, it gave me an opportunity to interact with parents, even, you know, outside of the context of the school classroom or in a kind of casual setting to mm-hmm. build that relationship with parents. And I think, you know, to have a conversation with a parent that isn't my phone call home about something.
Right.
It's always delightful. And it just gave me a chance to get to know the student and something that they were interested in.
And it means a lot to them, believe it or not. My teacher's here.
Right? Yes. I mean, as they get older, they get a little more weird about it because, you know.
Right.
But when they're younger, I would say my seventh graders always, when I could show up and they would love to see that. And I think being involved in that kind of community event is really essential. Mm-hmm. I know one district that I taught in, they had this big parade around the community, like certain kind of days in the fall. And there was parade and floats that the high schoolers would have and the marching band. So showing up at something like that is so fun to be a part of and to see and witness and experience with your students. Cause I think those shared experience helps build those relationships.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I think that especially for someone who's newer to a school district or a school community, it's a great way to get to know people in a very just casual environment. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's very helpful. And just to get to know, what the community is like. I like what you also said about inviting community members in to speak to mm-hmm. kind of help expose students to different things. I think that's a great idea.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
Especially, I always love it when schools do like a career day and they invite people from the community. It's a great way to get to know different careers and the people in the community.
Right. So often, I know we did a lot of career days too. But it's important as we do the career days that you can have a diverse population, but it's very important for them to see people of a certain caliber that look like them. Because when we first started having career days, it was so many people, nurses, very professional people, but very few of them looked like them. So it is important that people that can share a story that although your life may be like this now, there is hope because this is where I've been through. So it's important with those career days. And I was an advocate for that. I said, we need to start getting people that really, you know, they can relate to, that can really inspire them that I can do this. That there's hope for me. So that is important. But I like the career days also.
Yeah.
I always said it's important for them to see people of a certain caliber that look like them.
Yeah. Especially if they've come from the community too. Like I think that's great to like reach out to alumni and different people that, you know, have come from that community. Cause that's really important to see for students. To
definitely
see that representation.
It definitely is.
Yeah. Such as yourself.
I've been back to my school a couple of times.
Exactly. So, you know, your lengthy career is a testament to your passion and your dedication to education and your community. What would you say to teachers who are feeling the burnout of a career in education? You talked a lot about this at the beginning, just the retention mm-hmm. of teachers. What would you say to those teachers that are feeling like, I just don't know if I can keep doing this?
And I'm asked that a lot, and that's a really good question. And I have to be extremely honest. Since I've had teachers that were really good and just really doing their best and effective in a lot of ways, but they were feeling burnt out. And I just did think I could to encourage them under putting myself in their situation and understanding everything that they were going through and being able to provide helpful feedback and encouragement and different ideas on how to handle certain things and encouraging them and putting in time to check on them, putting in time to support them in any aspect that I could, because I supported a lot of teachers at my school in a lot of areas. And then also encouraging them to take time for their self, because that's something that I was not very good at early on, because that is important to take that self-care, to take that time for yourself. And then just be there, support it, calling them and just supporting them, because we need good, effective teachers. So in every aspect, everything that I could do to keep them in the profession, but basically being there and being supportive and offering words of encouragement and trying to find the root of why they're burnt out, because of behavior problems. Are they burnt out because of parental involvement? Are they burnt out because of the several low levels? Because each year you have so many students that are below basic that are coming to you, burnout from not getting enough sleep. And then just focus on those areas and help and support them in that area. And just reminding them that they are making a difference and reminding them that they're doing a good job, because sometimes we all need a pep talk too. We need a pep talk. We need that encouragement, especially teachers when they get to that burnout state, because they need that. And all of them that are putting in the work, that's why they do get burnt out a lot. And I would do everything I can to support them and give them encouragement. Focus on the areas of that's mostly burning them out, and work for solutions on helping that teacher in those particular areas.
Yeah. And I think what you talk about, you know, I think your time as a leader probably speaks to this, but that idea of there's things that you can do to support your teachers at a system level, whether that is, you know, trying to build systems within your schools to really make sure that teachers aren't overloaded with administrative work, right? Exactly. I mean, I think there was one year where I had a principal that instead of all the teachers writing out little slips for students to stay after school, all we had to do was submit names, and then the kids would get, you know, slips right at the end of the day and then be delivered to like whatever study hall or something that after school. They took an administrative burden off the teacher's shoulders, so that it was just like one less thing for us to do. Things like that, or even just really being intentional about mentorship and making sure they don't feel alone in the work, or really listening to the problems that they are having, I think can really carry a long way.
It can.
You know, and I've talked to educators on our podcast before just about the importance of really the reflection on what can leaders do to make a difference for students. And I would say that at the school level and the district level, I think is really important when you're trying to retain teachers, is to really reflect on what is our system burning teachers out, or are there things that we can do to help provide support for them?
Exactly.
This is such a great conversation. I'm just learning so much from you and your years of experience. And it's just so fun that you get to go out and talk to districts and schools all the time about your work. And I think that those hearing from longtime educators always gave me a little bit of hope and inspiration for our years. And so that's the hope with this episode, is to kind of give some inspiration to our audience and the work that they're doing, and that just knowing that you never know the impact that you have on a student. You may have a TV show named after, inspired by you.
Yeah, that's the truth. That is the truth. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I just wish you
all the best. It was really great. Thank you for having me. It's all the teachers that may be listening. You are definitely making a difference, and you're making a difference. You're doing good work, and just understand, this job is not easy, but it's so rewarding. At the end of the night, you can really rest knowing that, you know, that you are making a difference in the life of a child.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.